Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
This is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another really nice day. I mean, it's not too hot. Got a nice breeze out there. This is very pleasant weather for October, so enjoy it, folks. I've got a little PSA, a little public service announcement for folks. If you are
we're doing local show stuff to begin, right?
Yeah.
What do you got?
Yeah. If you are headed anywhere toward the Auburn Mall, be aware that the lights are out at the intersection of University. That's, you know,
and Opelika
and Opelika Road. Okay. So I mean, they're police. They're handling it now, but it may take you a little longer. That's why I was a little tight getting here.
I wouldn't be upset if the light was permanently out at Dean and Opelika, and they always had police sort of directing traffic there in lieu of the current system they have it at that light.
I wish then that they could, yeah, they go over and hand tickets to folks that come flying up in the left lane.
Be safe out there on Opelika Road, especially as folks are getting done with work.
Yeah. So anyway, with that said, welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Again, I apologize. I mean, I've got just dang sinuses, man. The last couple of days are just wearing me out.
Are you back? Are you back in the yard? You know, how we haven't done like a knee recovery.
I haven't done a whole lot out there. I mean, I've done a few things. I can get around a lot better than I was. I graduated today from physical therapy, they told me.
Okay, congratulations.
In other words, insurance isn't covering any more trips. So.
That's what that means to graduate.
Oh. Yeah.
You'd rather be held back in some cases.
Said, well, and they told me they'd send me a diploma, and I said, well, as long as I can walk out to the mailbox and get it, I guess that's fine.
Are the Halloween decorations, are they going up?
They're about to be brought out of the attic.
When's the right time?
I don't know.
For people to do.
I don't know. I mean,
Justin Ferguson, you're a homeowner now.
Some people had already have them up.
I've been a homeowner for more than a year.
When is proper?
Well, there you go.
When is proper Halloween decoration?
October 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, so my neighborhood
not
is,
before October 1st, no, is my no. feeling.
My neighborhood is very into Halloween. Very
yeah, you got a lot of kids.
A lot of kids in our neighborhood. A lot of people who just like decorate and put a ton of stuff out in their yard.
I like the one when you're first coming into your neighborhood, right there on the corner.
Yep.
I mean, I always turn there to go down to Matt's house, straight down is your house.
Yep.
And they've got like yearly. I mean,
yep,
they rotate, Dan. I mean, they rotate different decorations year round.
So
Justin lives on Elm Street, right? That's how you can tell that he's very into Halloween.
So there's been a lot of that already getting broken out here over the last couple of days. I think it's fine. It's kind of like my take. My take has always been for Christmas. It's like after Thanksgiving. As soon as, you know, if you want to start putting it up after Thanksgiving, I'm not going to do it before then. I know people do.
I'm not going to do it before then. I generally don't. I generally don't do it much before around the 10th.
And it'll be especially. Well,
I mean, yeah.
It'll
stay up till the end. I mean, you know, I figure three weeks or maybe a little more is about enough.
It'll be especially difficult for Ferguson to put the Christmas decorations up right before Thanksgiving this year because he'll be in Las Vegas.
Oh yeah, I'm not doing it. Period.
He'll be in Las Vegas watching Auburn. And
what
the,
are you big time in it now? You've got a crew that comes and does it or something?
No, it's just my wife does it.
Oh, okay.
They don't trust me to decorate. And
oh,
like,
no, no. See,
I've broken too many Christmas ornaments in my lifetime to be like, you know, y'all got it. Like I'm like, yeah, y'all take care of it.
That's how you get out of it. Yeah.
Now we've got. I probably get into the Halloween decorations as much or more than I do with Christmas. I mean, I've got to have everything. It seems like every year I add something. I haven't added a new one yet for this year.
Bill's house is the one with the 4 10-foot skeletons dressed as the Beatles.
That would be good, but then I'm also cheap. I mean, I find the best deals that I can. But no, I mean, I do have multiple skeletons and a pirate and screaming witches and all kinds of things. We're loaning out our friendly ghosts, though.
Okay.
We have a Casper that's on the front porch because my wife tells me there's got to be something friendly or the little kids are never going to come to the front door.
Maybe like a parrot head skeleton. Maybe, you know, like a Jimmy Buffett fan. Maybe, you know, have one of those.
That would be pretty good.
Find an old Hawaiian shirt in the attic.
Yeah, but anyway, we're loaning out Casper this weekend because it's Sarah's first birthday in a few days, so she's having a little boo day party is what they're calling it on Saturday. That's what Amanda came up with.
Should be a lot of fun. October in Auburn is always, I mean, between the weather cooling off a little bit and the different festivities, Oktoberfest, Halloween stuff. It's always a good time.
Oh yeah, and this is an open date week, so you know it's sort of a relaxing time. Great to have Justin here, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, in after Auburn's pro day yesterday in basketball. Let's get started talking some basketball. We will, I guess, if we have to, if you twist our arms, we'll talk some football. No, we
would. I'd rather not. y'all call in. And
we've been doing it for 3 days.
I was about to say, call in and do it, fine. But no, like, I got it. I don't want to bring it up now.
Well, I'm going to have to bring it up to you at some point. But I thought we'd start off talking about on a positive note.
We talk about it with Pascal, and then limit.
Yeah, we can do that. David Pascal will join us in the second hour.
Ferg and I went an hour 30, hour 40 on the Observer podcast without talking any football at all. I mean, we found a way, but
it's getting easier to do.
That was very easy for me,
and that was a full season preview with a recap of that scrimmage that Ferg had gotten to watch.
I'll talk anything y'all want to talk about Auburn basketball.
And some reminiscing of the Bruce Pearl era too, which felt appropriate on a basketball only podcast. You know, we reacted to the news of Bruce's retirement when it happened a week ago. But I thought, I thought it made sense to talk some recent Auburn basketball history on top of previewing this season. So yeah, and folks can check that episode out.
Yep. It's a subscribers podcast. Check it out at auburnobserver.com. $6 a month or $60 a year. You can also check out all of the observations from yesterday's pro day scrimmage, because we had a ton of them. Got to see the whole practice. Obviously, talked to Stephen Pearl for a while after practice as well. So there's a lot to get to from that.
Yeah, and Stephen was very good, and I mean, offering up all kinds of numbers and everything. I mean, it sounded like you guys got to sort of keep up with the numbers yesterday and be able to talk about, you know, what was going on. But I thought it was very interesting, very candid of Stephen to just point out who had done what so far this fall. He gave quite a few numbers on, you know, what a lot of the guys have done.
Yeah. And I think really the big thing I'll say about this Auburn basketball team, now that it's entering a new era, the one thing I've gotten the last couple of weeks, and you really saw it yesterday in the pro day scrimmage, is that this offense has a ton of potential. They're going to play fast. They're going to shoot a ton. They're going to hit a lot of shots. I mean, yesterday's scrimmage, if you extrapolated out those points to a whole game.
Yeah, how many minutes did they actually play?
It was they ended up playing 18 minutes.
Wow.
So 3 4-minute periods and then a 6-minute period.
Yeah,
so,
you're right there.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I was thinking probably three-quarter, 30 minutes or something. Nope. I was thinking, no, my goodness. Yeah.
So the winning team would have scored well over 100, and the losing team would have scored close to it. As, you know, Stephen Pearl said yesterday, we'll see what that means about the defense. Defense is going to be a work in progress, but, I mean, they shot nearly 45% from deep yesterday in that scrimmage, and that was with Tahad Pettifer going 2-9 from deep. So really, really impressive. They are playing fast. They're playing with a ton of confidence. We had said this in the preseason before the coaching change as well. They built this offense and they built this roster to be like, all right, Tahad Pettiford's our returning player. What is he good at? Getting out and running, playing in transition. They've got an army of guys that are really good at playing in transition and catching and shooting. And you saw that yesterday in the scrimmage. Caden Magwood, 4 or 5 from deep. I think at least two of his makes were with his feet on the logo. he's fearless, man. And you just got so many guys getting involved and scoring at a high clip. And it's not just taking threes. I think, you know, Keyshawn Hall is a fantastic one-on-one scorer and showed it in this game. You just had some of everything in this one. You know, Stephen Pearl said afterwards, I thought this was a good point. In transition, when they're getting out and going, it's a whole lot of fun. When they have to sit there and actually run a play in the half court, they were very, very efficient in that as well.
That's good. That's the thing I was wondering about.
Yeah, it wasn't like they were scrambling a ton. You know, too much out there. This is still Mike Burgermaster, still the offensive coordinator. They're still going to have some good half court sets.
Todd's always seemed like a guy who can operate in the half court, even if he's obviously very comfortable on the. But we made the point yesterday, Bill. Like it last year's team, it wouldn't have made sense to try to play breakneck
full court. No, just up and down. No, I mean when you had a post player like Janai. No, you want to take advantage. You hear that other sports? I mean, you know, maybe play to your strength. But no, it made perfect sense to do that last year. This year, I think Auburn's got the athletes and multiple players that can just drain shots. I think you said yesterday might be sort of more reminiscent of the Alabama style.
Well, and Alabama had a lot of success running a lot of their offense through a guard who, I mean, it's not the craziest comp in the world if you see a little bit of Mark Sears in what Todd Pettiford can do and what he can bring to an offense
I don't love that.
I think it's more the usage than the style of play, yeah. Right? I think it's more about just the idea of like having a guard that you want dominating the ball more than Auburn's necessarily had with one guard.
Well, I'm thinking more in the, you know, I'm not so worried about the shot clock, getting the ball down, and when you get a good shot, take it. I mean,
yeah, they're definitely going to do that, and they are, I think they're going to be empowered to take some shots that people are going to be like, why did they take that shot?
Wow,
they're going to hit them. There were a couple yesterday where Magwood. You're like, what in the world is he doing pulling up from there with that kind of coverage, and bang, just knocks it down. It's just you've got a very confident group of shooters. I think you're surrounding them with some really good catch-and-shoot guys. I think the other thing, too, is this front court is very athletic. They're built to run, and they've even got some shooting potential. Obviously, Keyshawn Hall is a very gifted scorer, but we saw Keyshawn Murphy try a couple threes yesterday. You know, Filip Jovic has that in his game as well. Opura might not. He's been banged up right now. But everybody else in that front court, I mean, they are built to running it. And Sebastian Williams-Adams might be the most improved player on the team. This is a guy who shot 15% from deep in the summer. He's shooting 45% from deep right now in the fall. He is really, really put in a ton of work shooting the three. He's a really good catch-and-shoot guy.
Yeah, and I mean, it was really interesting hearing Steven talking about him, about how he's a – second leading offensive rebounder because nobody wants to be in his way.
Yeah, nobody wants to be in his way. He said him and Elijah Freeman impact winning. They're going to do a lot of impact in winning because they do a lot of little things well. Both those guys are really talented rebounders. And they're making steps up, obviously, right? You know, SWA or Sway, as they call him. You know, he's going from high school to the SEC. Elijah Freeman's going from D2 to the SEC. Those are big, big jumps to make. But these guys are great athletes, and if they've got the mentality and the drive to, like, go make some winning plays on the glass, go make some winning plays on defense, it's going to go a long way this team because somebody's got to do that. They got to find that from those guys, and those two are really leading the charge there.
Yeah, I was really curious to see what we heard about Sebastian, Phillip, and Emeka especially because the Keyshawns seem like fairly known quantities, you know, the guys that have played a lot of D1 basketball coming in. You never know exactly how it's going to go, but I think it's safer to assume with those two guys. But you still need more than just two front court players, especially in the system that Auburn's run the last couple of years and the development of, I mean, what were you necessarily expecting, Justin, when it comes to, I guess Emeka's injured, so it's you can take him out of the conversation, but how much Auburn was going to need Sebastian and Phillip going in and sort of what you've seen so far about how ready those two guys are to contribute.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now you have three guys who can play power forward for you. And Jovic is having to play a little bit more five right now because Aparam's been out. Aparam was supposed to be back at practice today. I didn't get out there in time before coming over here, but he was supposed to be clear today and start going there. But, yeah, I mean, I think you were going to need one of either Sway or Jovic to be ready to be your backup too because, you know, Keyshawn Hall's going to play a lot of minutes, but he can't play all of them. Elijah Freeman is more of a 3 than a 3-4 type of guy. So, yeah, they were needing it. And I think Sway's done a really good job of really stepping up to the moment. And you know, not – I don't think I'm popping any bubbles here when I say last couple of weeks there was some uncertainty about Keyshawn Hall and you know, what his future was like at Auburn. Obviously, yesterday, you know, the news comes out and said – you know, the news of how they had verbally committed to staying with the team, and that was a big move for Auburn. But, you know, that I think got more opportunities naturally for a guy like Sebastian to play more and show that he can belong at this level, and I think he took advantage of it. And I think that's a, you know, full-strength roster. The back and forth you could have between Hall and Sway is really, really good. Filip Jovic, the thing with him, it's going to take him some time.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you'd think, well, he's played pro ball, but I mean, he's making a big, big step to not just American, but SEC basketball.
And he's a really talented player. He had a really good spin move yesterday on Keyshawn Murphy that got him a nice bucket. He plays above the rim. He's really good at getting downhill. But he has got to adjust to this style of basketball. And the big thing for that is, you know, when they got him out of Serbia, you watch his film and it's like, wow, this dude's a really, really good athlete for a European big man. Well, who's the best athlete on the floor pretty much every time he stepped out there?
What did Steven say
yesterday?
He's
probably about the sixth, you know, best.
He said he's
best.
Maybe the seventh best athlete on the team.
And that's an adjustment. It doesn't mean he's not a bad athlete. Doesn't mean he's a bad player. It's just like, okay, the stuff that was working for me every single time back home is not working for me every single time over here. So you've got to adapt your game. You got to evolve it. I think the other thing that we want to see is like, hey man, you're 6'8". You need to be rebounding, and kind of challenging him to be more of a rebounder.
If you're not ready to do like the dirty work stuff is so important for Auburn front court, and that's something that
scoring's not going to be an issue, I don't think, for this team. So if you're further down the rotation and you want to earn playing time and earn a role, you got to do kind of like what you said with, and I think Freeman potentially can end up being a starter on this team. I think he might be my favorite to start at the three at the moment.
It sounds like defensively he is.
Might be their best defense. Him and Overton on the perimeter have been really, really good. But, like, if you are a Sebastian Williams-Adams or you are a Filip Jovic, like, the shooting and the scoring is going to come, like, from a lot of people on this team. You got to be able to do the dirty work, especially in the front court. And when you have a guy like, you know, Keyshawn Murphy at the five who 7-7 in an 18-minute scrimmage, you know, yesterday, it just shows you this guy – is really, really good and, like, you know, kind of guarding his yard and cleaning up around the basket. And he was doing it. This was the first time he'd been cleared in weeks to go full speed. So, really good sign for him.
All right. We're just underway. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with Bill and Dan here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. And, we started off talking a little basketball, and we'll continue getting Justin's thoughts. I mean,
he talked a little bit about Magwood, at the beginning there. You know, we got into some other aspects of the team, but that other guard next to Tahad, and obviously, you know, they're going to see some Magwood when Tahad's on the bench too as the backup point guard. But between Overton,
it's going to take certain matchups, I think, though, to see Tahad and Magwood on.
They got to hold up on defense. I asked Steven about this specifically yesterday. The potential of playing both Tahad Pettiford and Caden Magwood on the floor at the same time on offense is awesome because they're kind of the same dude.
Yeah,
and they're very
offensively. It's scary.
But you don't want to get overrun on defense because you have two smaller guards back there, and you know defense isn't Tahad's strongest suit. And Cade Magwood's a freshman. They're right. smaller guys, and it's just it could work. You're gonna have to get a lot. You're gonna have to see a lot on defense for it not to be just something that maybe occasionally you throw out there. The good news is they've got options at the two spot. Kevin Overton, I think, is. Again, everyone's sleeping on him. I think a lot of Auburn fans are just they're looking at the numbers from Texas Tech last season and thinking, "Oh, what's the big deal? That dude's probably your starting two guard, and he's gonna be quite a weapon." Abdul Bashir, a guy who could play the two or the three, I think you know can give you that help as well. But yeah, Pettiford being a guy who can play, you know, probably gonna play 32, 34 or something minutes. Magwood will get those point guard minutes behind him, but if you want to play him more. You can play him at the two. He's just got to be able to defend the two, and that's easier said than done in this league.
Who's another guy that could run the point?
Right now they don't really have one. Overton could, I guess. Bashir could, he kind of did a lot of ball. He was the primary ball handler a lot in JUCO play initiator.
Was Steven talking about defensively when he was talking about Freeman 1 through 4? Was he talking about defense?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And look, Freeman, I mean, could. I don't think that's the best use of his skills.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, I think for Auburn, like, they feel really confident that they can get 40 minutes out of Pettiford and Magwood at point. It's just a matter of, to me, I think it's just a matter of the minutes you're not get like, the non-point guard minutes for Magwood, how much does he get? Because he's going to have a role.
And you got
just
plenty of other options at the two.
Yeah, and just can you – is it worth finding extra minutes for him? I think he might be that good. It's just you got to defend with it.
We talked about the adjustments that Sebastian and Phillip and for that matter, a lot. Like you have guys making jumps from Freeman, you know, guys that are making jumps from different levels. Bashir is making the jump from it's not just junior college. It's kind of a strange league in junior college, right? Is he the one?
He played at Casper out on the west, out west.
It's like the Pacific Coast League of junior colleges, right? It's
yeah. I had the numbers at one point. Like it was.
They don't play any defense. At
yeah,
all.
His JUCO league. Four different teams average over 100 a game.
What's his adjustment going to be like to the Auburn system?
I think I think offensively he reminds me a lot of Miles Kelly in terms of being a catch and shoot. And if that dude's your fourth or fifth option, he's a dead eye as your fourth or fifth option. Like he's going to be able to, he's not going to be the guy who goes and creates his own shot. That's where he's kind of like Miles in that regard, but the gravity created by other guys, he's going to have kick out opportunities where he's going to be able to knock down shots. We saw that. I mean, how many games did Miles go nuts last year on where it's just like, the defense was really focused on getting the ball out of certain guys' hands. He's got a lot of that to his game. Defensively, we will see. It is an adjustment for sure. I don't think he's a bad defender at all. He's working hard on that end. He's got good wingspan. He's got good size. He's got the potential, a little skinny, a little light, but he's got the potential to be a pretty good defender in time. It's just playing defense at this level is tough, and it is a completely different ball game than when he was playing out in JUCO, where in JUCO it was a lot of get it out and go for both teams all 40 minutes, and you know it's just not as quite as comparable as what you're going to get here. So he's got a transition there. Offensively, though, I mean, I really love his catch and shoot game. He's one of those guys where I think this season, if you get to the arena early. Like watch him shoot in warmups. He's that kind of like really special 3-point shooter.
334-321-1390 is the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Who we got?
Let's get to Brett.
Hey guys.
Hey buddy.
Hey y'all. I believe you answered part of my question. You were talking about defense, and I was wondering about Bashir. I saw somebody's projected. Starting lineup with him playing backup small forward and the walk on, with the longer name.
Yeah, Muschelet. Yeah.
Playing backup at shooting guard.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see like what they want to do at that rotation. Muschelet's been a guy that's had to, he's the 10th man right now because Simon Walker's hurt. They hope to get Walker back at some point this season. They liked what he did in the preseason as that two guard before he went down with that injury. But, yeah, he is – it's like he's playing a lot of three. It's him and Freeman at the three a lot. Overton getting a lot of the two. But, yeah, I'm very curious to see – that's where we think, like, you know, Magwood could play some two. Bashir could play some two as well. And then, you know, hopefully you can get Sumble Walker at some point. I'm not sitting here and saying, like, right off Blake Musterlake, but, like, he is definitely towards the back. And right now, to scrimmage five on five, he is that that fifth
guy.
Yeah,
you've got
to have him. Yeah, well, I'm surprised they hadn't. I hadn't heard more talk of Keyshawn Hall playing some small forward. And, you know, heck, even at times playing a shooting guard. You know, offensively, he can definitely do it.
You're absolutely right. He has played more of the four. I think Auburn's got more depth at the four, especially if they have a healthy – both of their fives are ready to go, if, like, they can get Opurim back and going. Yeah, maybe you could do a bigger lineup where you play Hall at the three, and then it kicks everyone down, right? Freeman can play the two. Yeah. You know, Bashir can play the two.
That was something
kind of versatility that we may get to see them experiment with. They just got to get everybody healthy at this point.
That was something we wanted to watch for when practice first opened, was how are they going to use Freeman? How are they going to use Hall? Seems like Freeman is working
Freeman's a wing. I don't see him playing the four.
And I could see Hall's
a four who could, as Brett's saying, kick over to the wing if they wanted to, but they're using him primarily as kind of a matchup problem guy at the four.
Yeah, how about if he's remains healthy or whatever? Opurim, do you think? I mean, it looks like he's definitely athletic enough, and certainly tall enough.
Yeah,
do you think he can play 10-12 minutes in the game?
I think he could. He's got to get healthy. He's supposed to be cleared today to go back. Defensively, I think he's everything that they want in a big man. He's got great wingspan. Obviously, he was an elite shot blocker at the JUCO level. The one thing, Brett, that's really surprised me, and we haven't got to see a ton of him this last week because he's been dealing with that back injury, I think he's more polished on the offensive end than maybe his film gave him credit for in JUCO. He was a lob guy, he's got a pretty good shooting form. I think he's going to be a better free throw guy than maybe you would have thought coming out. He looks more comfortable on the ball than I expected him to be. So, to answer your question, I think if he's healthy, he could give you those good backup center minutes. And if not, you're probably looking at a situation where Jovich and Sebastian are probably playing like small ball five.
What do you think the sweet spot would be as far as minutes for Hall and Murphy, right? Because then that decides sort of how many are left for
– I think Hall's a guy who can play near 30, and I think Murphy's a guy that you're going to play as much as possible, but he's a big man, so you're probably not going to stretch him out too much.
25.
Yeah, 25, 26, something like that.
So you probably, thinking 20, 25 minutes of backcourt availability – front court availability between the two of them for Sebastian and Phillip.
Jovich and Opurim.
So
they've got. I think, you know, Stephen Pearl said it yesterday. They want to play 9 or 10 guys this year. They have 10 scholarship guys when everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, with Simon Walker, I think they've got a good 9 if they can get Opurim back going for
they
sure.
They have 11, don't they? They would have 11.
They would have 11. Yeah, you're
because
right.
Mecca.
Matt
Mack. Hey, Dan, last thing. Dodgers looking pretty good, man.
I think this Philly series is going to be a good one. Feels well. I mean, I've worried all year that it feels like it's Philly's season. You know, it's their shot in the National League. But I think the Dodgers, you know, they took care of business against Cincinnati. Want to see what it looks like when they play the Phils.
Y'all
have a great evening.
Shohei will become the first player ever to start as a pitcher and a hitter in the postseason.
Yep.
No major league
game one.
He's gonna.
Yep. He's a starting pitcher in game one against the Phils, and there's never been a player that's done that in major league history.
Would they have? Do you think they would have started him in game three if there had been a?
Yes. Yeah. He was. Yeah. They'd already said he was a starter in game three if the Reds had won last night.
Yeah. I mean Snell came up big early. That's a guy who. You know, basically his season starts second half of August.
Sometime post All-Star game. I mean, just forget about him, you know. If you're in fantasy.
It could be worse. It's the complete opposite of what Pete Carroll Armstrong is doing right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember, that but, dude I mean, was like the best outfielder in baseball.
Yep.
And
second half is tough. for a lot of folks. But yeah,
Blake Snell's kind of like Michael Harris. It's just like once it gets hot, he starts thinking, all right, it's time to play a little ball.
He is the best pitcher in baseball in the second half, period.
Snell? I mean,
yeah, always.
And Yamamoto was one of the best in the National League
all year
this season. Yeah. So yeah, I mean the Dodgers will take some they'll take some weapons into Philly, but Philly was, I mean you want to make the case they were the best team in the National League, you know, consistently all season long.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I would listen.
They're the team that I would be afraid of the most in the postseason. The obviously the Dodgers are the Dodgers. The thing with me with the Dodgers is I don't know if I trust their bullpen as much as I trust the Phillies bullpen. That Phillies bullpen's pretty nasty.
Durant. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that's gonna be a really fun series. Whoever wins this Cubs Padres series, we were talking, before, like kind of feel like Brewers obviously earned where they are right now, but also like that's the one where I'm like a little iffy.
The Cubs and Padres have got more all stars than the Brewers do. The Brewers got some really, really good young guys. You don't know, how they're all going to handle it here in the postseason. We've got nothing but elimination games today. The Dodgers, the only team to win in two, and looks like the Tigers are going to take two out of three in Cleveland. They're up 6-1 in the bottom of the seventh. Meanwhile, the Cubs threatening against Yu Darvish and the Padres here in the bottom of the second. They've got runners at second and third, and nobody out.
Yeah, Suzuki just
he has really been hot down the stretch.
Have we mentioned before we take the bottom of the hour break that at 5 o'clock we will?
Yeah, we did just briefly. David Pascal from Chattanooga will join us at 5 o'clock. So, if you've got any questions you'd like us to ask of him, you can call and let us know. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Talking basketball up to this point.
That's right. I'm going to try not to sink our picks after your momentum last week, Bill.
Who did you go with?
I went.
You know, the thing is, since I wasn't picking this week,
wow.
PCA with a snaps his hitless streak. Here in the postseason, and the Cubs break on top 1-0.
You get Darvish out of there ASAP. This is usually when it starts to.
Yeah, absolutely, you do. In an elimination game, yeah, you better have everybody. Of course, Dylan Cease only went 3 1/3. Did you see? We'll get back to the
pitch.
No. Did you see that the fact that Dylan Cease yesterday went 3 1/3 innings? That is the longest postseason appearance in De La Cisa's career.
Wow, okay.
3 1/3. But anyway, all right, so you were saying, I wasn't picking this week in Doug's picking contest, which, by the way, I went 9-1.
9-1.
I'm 17-3 over the last two times I picked.
That's right.
And Brian is not doing his picking thing this week because he doesn't do it when Auburn plays. So I haven't really perused and looked at, all the games. There are a few interesting in the SEC. There's Miami, Florida State.
It's a chalky week in the SEC, though. You got four different games where the line is at least a touchdown. Vanderbilt's a two-score underdog in Tuscaloosa. Texas is favored by more than a touchdown in Gainesville.
Is it more than a touchdown?
Seven and a half was the number we used.
I heard today it was under seven.
A&M is a two-touchdown favorite at home against State.
I wonder about that one too.
I wonder about State right after getting their heart broken, right? Like a week after losing a game like a big game like that at home,
but
to
A&M
go on
after,
the road.
A&M after winning last week and feeling pretty good about themselves. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess something's got to give.
I feel like that one could be pretty close.
I have a feeling.
You took A&M and laid the
points. What? I think it's chalky. I think it's real chalky this week.
You went with the favorites.
Yeah, I took Georgia. I think it's going to start to break apart for Stoops and Kentucky. I think you've got a we're picking the numbers.
Doug goes with the numbers.
Justin switched microphones.
So. Yeah, so we could see the TV because we kept looking up over Justin's head while we were talking to him.
Yeah, it was hurting my neck. I can't hear myself over here either. So.
Yeah, no, that one. Yeah, that's.
No, we're good. We're good.
You got to turn it back. You got to maxify it.
I can plug it in over here.
All right.
In the meantime, no, yeah, for Doug's thing, I had a feeling about a lot. And the Florida State Miami one, like I just feel like that's a field goal game. Maybe it's because it always is, right? You know, there's some famously one score games between Florida State and Miami over the last few years. So I'm thinking there's probably another. So I took Florida State at home, but I went favorites the rest of the way. I just feel like maybe this is the separation week.
Yeah.
In the SEC.
Well, I don't know that I'd argue much with those. Yeah, I mean. There aren't games that I go, wow, I've just got to, you know.
What?
I'll see how things are going, and I'm sure I'll be watching them, but I don't expect, you know, great finishes or anything in these
What's
games.
The argument for Vanderbilt and Alabama being close?
Like, Diego Pavia.
Is it the thought that the way
Vandy plays.
Yeah. I mean, is it –
if Vandy can keep the ball like they do against everybody else.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
they got a really good offense, man.
They do.
I mean, because Bama seemed to put some things together the last couple of weeks. You didn't want to.
They still haven't been able to run the ball consistently.
No, but seeing time.
And if Vandy can, they're going to dominate time of possession and try to play that way.
And if Vanderbilt's ability to hold the ball until the very end of the play clock.
Oh yeah.
Every single time they can shorten games that way,
and Pavia doesn't make a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, there's probably pressure on Alabama to sort of take control of that game early because the expectation is
they will. I mean, they've got the revenge motive, if you will, after losing last year, and they also want to prove that. They're not going to have that letdown after the Georgia win, just like they did a year ago.
And the longer that game's close, like the worse the vibes are going to get.
Oh yeah,
right?
No kidding.
Inside Bryant Denny, so I can understand. Like, there's pressure to get things going. I do like the way Simpson has played.
Ty Simpson,
the
is
last
playing
couple of weeks, yeah.
Tremendous football. I mean, he really is. He's very confident, but I mean, the way he's making his throws, he ought to be confident.
And it is in contrast to. And I think Milroe could still be a pretty good pro. Like, I don't know how things are going to work out. See, you know, if things take a turn for Sam Darnold in Seattle, you know, they might go to Milroe soon. You know, if things were to capsize there. But last season it did feel kind of square peg round hole, right? With the Milroe, you know, with what Milroe does well and what DeBoer seemingly wants the quarterback to do in that offense.
I think it doesn't hurt that Ryan Grubb's back with him.
You got Grubb now too. Yeah. So I mean, I think Bama is a team. Like I wondered about that stretch where they played Georgia and Vanderbilt and Missouri, but right now they look to be a pretty tough matchup.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that was the problem last year is they couldn't get that consistency going. We'll see if they can keep that up. Now I don't think they've lost a home game under DeBoer. It's been on the road that they've struggled, but we will see if they can, you know, continue. Second half last week, they didn't do much. They didn't have to, but, I mean, they could have lost that ball game last week. I still don't understand Kirby, you know, not taking points when he had an opportunity to tie the ball game.
Using a former walk-on to try to get the edge against Alabama.
Yeah.
With an offensive line that's already been struggling this year.
Yeah, but I guess
they had their chances.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and the walk-on thing worked okay for McConkie, right? For, you know, so maybe they think he's got the magic.
It's not remotely comparable, and you know that.
Not the same thing with Cash Jones.
Yeah.
But it's it was.
I forgot that Cash Jones was a 1,000-yard running back.
I missed that. With Georgia, no, the thought that, like, they seemingly regained the momentum after the slow start, just like against Tennessee when they get the Alabama missed field goal, they score really quickly after
that. It's 24-21 with tons of time.
And the thought that, I can't imagine that being your final. Like when that score happens.
No, you're right. I thought it was going to take 30.
Yeah.
For sure.
And instead, Georgia's got some things to straighten out. Kentucky's probably the opponent you want in the SEC right now, if you got to straighten some things out.
Yep.
You're struggling in pass defense. I'd want to play Kentucky right now.
Yeah, I mean, that feels like there are a couple situations in the SEC where I'm wondering if you're close to a breaking point, and if this weekend is that breaking point, Kentucky, you know, is one where it just feels like things could get worse. Arkansas already reached the breaking point by making the change.
You wonder, I mean, if Texas were to find That's themselves the other one, yeah. and go in and thump Florida, yeah. you wonder about that.
Florida's just like we've
talked about next weekend yes. for Auburn hosting Georgia.
Yeah, there are probably some uncomfortable similarities between the situation that Florida finds itself in right now and the one Auburn finds itself in or could find itself in next week. And part of it is, like, the offense, the head coach, like, this is his offense. And you wonder how much it can change or how much it can improve or if this is what you're going to get. And if it's what you're going to get, it feels like the status quo can't possibly stick around.
All right, but was Billy Napier, did people really think of Billy Napier's offense when it came in? I mean, my thought was Billy Napier, great recruiter, yeah. Is going to assemble talent. And
he hasn't been the offensive
played well.
He's been the offensive coordinator, hasn't he?
Yes.
Or the play caller, yeah. So.
And he was well.
But he didn't have that rep more like
it is
as
his
much,
side of the
as,
ball,
much as Hugh did.
Yeah,
he
it was is his side of the ball.
And
though.
He was well regarded as a coordinator when he got the Louisiana job. Like the, you know, I think that mm-hmm. you know, success as a coordinator helped him get the
Where
the,
was he a coordinator?
I don't think it was a coordinator.
Other stops in Alabama.
Other stops in his career, right? Like before, was he at Arizona State? Wasn't that the
maybe. Because
he was part of that. He was part of that. That
he had a run at Clemson that was not successful.
No. But that's. I mean. But then you're right. I think there are some similarities there as far as his ability to organize and recruit and build
a
roster.
Similarities are the offenses have really really struggled.
Yeah, that's the big problem.
And they're not winning as much as the fan base would expect.
And the head coach doesn't really have somewhere to point the finger and some easy right. scapegoat to use. I mean, they could talk about making a quarterback change and thinking if that's going to work. But I mean,
going to change from DJ. Lack,
that's what
right?
I mean. Like, I mean, you can try that when things are bleak and it's not working for the offense. But no, I just, yeah, I think a,
he was offensive coordinator. As Justin said, and things didn't work out great at Clemson. He was the offensive coordinator for 1 year at Arizona State.
And so. I think that was he was there when they wanted to keep him, and he left. Wasn't that the Herm Edwards sort of? I think that was sort of the weird ending there for Napier and Arizona State and all.
No,
that
you're
stuff,
right. But, you're right. Then he went to Louisiana.
But the it just feels like this is a weekend where if you don't see progress, I think it could be. Like we are
you
using
see
a lot
more
of...
SEC coaches. I mean, we've already seen Sam Pittman go. Interesting that Bobby Petrino is already stumping for the job. He wants that job. Go out. I mean, that's no shock, I don't think. But what does Bobby Petrino have to do to keep the Arkansas job? He's got to win some games, but how many do you think he needs to win?
I mean,
get him to a bowl.
Yeah, and Arkansas to a bowl, yeah. Maybe it'd be tough to say no.
That's one of the tougher places to win in the conference, right? Like that now in this landscape.
And he's
like,
a guy that has won.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, I just wonder, like,
did he have two or three?
His offense is really good. I mean, I know they didn't have a ton of success against Notre Dame last week, but that offense has been really good for most of the season. So,
mm-hmm.
It could definitely work.
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, there's probably a reason why they made the move when they did to give him a real shot to
right.
see what he's got in this day and age.
Yeah, he's got an open date. He's at Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Auburn. He's got three straight home games: Texas A&M, Auburn, Mississippi State. Come in after they go to Knoxville. They've got another open date.
Is that A&M game not in Jerry World? Like,
no, I don't think it is. I think it's
they
I
moved
think
it
it's
out.
Fayetteville this year.
Yeah, they're going to Fayetteville for the first time. I think like it's the first time in a while,
yep.
right? They played that
yep.
game in Arlington for a really long time. And,
oh,
and, I've,
wow.
and I've seen you know I've seen Arkansas people like use a lot of the hot names out there.
Gruden.
Yeah, well, or and successful current head coaches that people yep. you know think could be poached.
That's
from the
a novel concept.
Yeah, you know, Lashley or
Rhett. I mean, Rhett seems like the one that makes the most sense for them because he's an Arkansas guy. He's been mm-hmm. told like the word has been he's always wanted that job.
Right,
and he's in a good situation at SMU, obviously, but if there was a way to get out, it's going home.
You're close enough to Sumrall that I think I've seen some people talk about, you know, his name too in there, but it just feels like
if I have an opening in the SEC this year, I'm looking at John Sumrall.
Yeah, I just think luring Sumrall. I think Arkansas luring a really successful head coach away from a spot where they're winning is going to be a tough sell.
No, I agree. So yeah, we'll see. But interesting that Bobby P wants, you know, he's let it be known that he wants to keep that job, and it'll be interesting. Yeah, I think they'll score some points. 334-321-1390. Need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
The music playing, so we'll step aside for our top of the hour break. On the other side, we'll check in with David Paschal from Chattanooga, get his thoughts on the SEC and the world of college football and more. So stick with us. We're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another nice-looking autumn afternoon. It actually feels that way. Not too hot, not too humid. An enjoyable Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we are joined by Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer as we talked a good bit of basketball in hour number one. Got into a little bit of football, looking at some of the games for this weekend, and right now we are in the process of getting in touch with our regular Thursday afternoon hour number two guest, and that is David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, who is just wrapping up his show on WGOW. He goes 2 to 5 our time, 3 to 6 Eastern time every day, Monday through Friday. So he's just wrapping up his show there in Chattanooga. So we will call him in here momentarily on the Drive hotline and talk with him, get his thoughts on the SEC and the world of college football as we continue here with hour number two of the Thursday Drive. And we will get to the Drive hotline and welcome in our good friend from Chattanooga, David Paschal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. I hope you guys are.
Doing pretty well. Hey, we spent most of the first hour talking basketball, so that's got us in a better mood than we'd been in the first few days of the week.
I can understand that. It's you know, you still try to put the positive spin and how Auburn's already played 3 games on the road against quality teams. They won one of them, but then the two that are like way up there. I mean, you've lost the two top 10 teams on the road, and you could argue, is anything going to be that tough the rest of the way? I mean, yes, Alabama's going to be tough and Georgia's going to be tough, but those were both at home. So I'm just trying to put a positive spin on it. But, you know, there's also going to Vanderbilt, and that's going to be tough because they're better than they've been in a long, long time. But, yeah, one yard in the fourth quarter, I can see why y'all would want to talk basketball.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to win if you don't score.
It is. Unless you can do interception returns, and that was almost a score.
Yeah.
It's tough because, you know, you go back to the Baylor game and you think about the comments after the game, and so much of the offseason was about the offensive line and the revamped offensive line, and the first impression was really, really good. But, you know, you just don't want to rank 136th in, you know, sacks allowed, and that's where Auburn sits.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's, you know, that Auburn is an example. Alabama is another example of, you know, the conclusions that people jump to about teams after a after a first game or even after a first few games. It takes a little while before you really know what you have, and I think we're still getting there, but we've got a better idea now as far as the SEC as to which teams you feel like are going to be there at the end.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with Auburn already losing a couple, and the other thing about Auburn that's so frustrating is the penalty. I mean, that's just one of those things that it just seems like there's a degree of issue to that every single week. Sometimes it's a huge issue, sometimes it's a noticeable issue, but it's always some kind of issue. I think Alabama, I thought that was a really nice win the other day. It's interesting if you had said that they'd go scoreless in the second half and still win. That's a unique dynamic. Mm-hmm. But Georgia has just been a very slow-starting team. You know, I covered them up in Knoxville, and Tennessee led that game 21-7 after the first quarter. And, Alabama led Georgia 14-0 in the early stages of the second quarter. And, you know, Kirby's like – you know, it's mostly been the defense. Why the defense comes out and starts so slow is kind of a head-scratcher to him.
Yeah, and then, Georgia had their opportunities. After they cut it to 24-21 with plenty of time to go in the ball game, I don't think there was anybody, and we mentioned this, Dan mentioned this in hour number one, I don't think anybody thought that those were the final points of the game when Georgia cut it to three at 24-21.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, having been in Starkville this past weekend with the Tennessee-Mississippi State game, each team had one huge drop that would have been like a touchdown from midfield or at least like a 50-yard gain, that kind of thing. And dang if it didn't happen in the Alabama-Georgia game. They each had one huge drop that really obviously could have affected the outcome. I mean, Bama could have been up even more, or Georgia could have been ahead. Then you had the Georgia getting stopped early in the fourth quarter on downs. So, yeah, there were all sorts of huge plays. I will say the league just delivered this past weekend. I mean, five head-to-head games, and four of them were determined by a single possession. And so far there have been 12 head-to-head games in the SEC and eight have been decided by 7 points or less. So it's really been an exciting start to the season in most cases.
And that's what's kind of striking about this weekend when you look at the slate of SEC games, is that you've got four different games where it looks like where you've got a touchdown plus point spread, or you've had at some point this week. Do you feel like is that a recipe for things to be more interesting than people expect, or do you think there could be some separation this weekend?
Well, there'll definitely be separation in that noon game. I just, even though that's kind of a tough situation for Georgia because you had this fantastic atmosphere against Alabama, and now you've got a noon game against Kentucky. So I can't imagine the Samford crowd's just going to be electric at 11:45, 15 minutes before that kick, but you are talking about Georgia's talent against Kentucky's talent. And even though that game was close last year, Georgia's beaten them every year since 2010. So, I mean, it's 15 in a row. And the games in Athens have not been close at all. I know since Kirby's been there, the average score against Kentucky in Athens is 38-10. So that game I don't expect to be close at all. But the game I think could be just fascinating is Alabama-Vandy. I really do. I think Vandy, they showed last year they can certainly play with them in Nashville. I think they can play with them in Tuscaloosa. And then I think another key to your question, Dan, would be what can Florida do? They've had some time off. We know how rough they've looked. I mean, I don't live and die with, like, betting lines, but it is interesting to see that the over-under in that game is only 42, give or take, and it totally makes sense. I mean, that's only about 10 or more, 8 or 10 more points than an Army-Navy game typically. So, you know, not a whole lot of points expected in Texas-Florida, and I understand why it's so low. I mean, you just hadn't seen that much from Florida, and it's not like Texas has been lighting the scoreboard on fire unless they're playing really outmatched teams.
No, Texas's offense, and Arch has really struggled here early on, so you would expect that ball game in Gainesville to be for points to be tough to come by because Florida struggled offensively as well. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one, David. That's going to be really interesting. We were just talking a little while ago, though. I mean, this is the the next couple of weeks. Very important weeks for programs and their coaches. I mean, we saw Arkansas go ahead and make the move with Sam Pittman and Bobby Petrino now, letting everyone know he definitely wants to hang on to that job. But, I mean, Billy Napier's situation at Florida, Mark Stoops at Kentucky. And then, look, if Auburn goes out and lays an egg and gets beaten, you know, soundly by Georgia, it's hard to, it's hard to feel like that Hugh Freeze is on firm ground.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, when you think about, like, in my lifetime, and I grew up kind of late in the Doug Barfield era, so, I mean, I was familiar with Pat Dye. Obviously, I was a student down there with Pat Dye, and you're talking about, I mean, if you're just talking SEC games, you know, Pat Dye was like 48-27, because I looked all this stuff up. He was like 48-27 with three ties in SEC games, and you know, you think about that. He got off to a tough start in 81 before he got it going, and then he had a kind of a tough last year or two, and then the rest of the way was obviously very dominant. Terry Bowden was very good in SEC games. He was like 30-14 with a tie. Tuberville was 50-30, and then and Malzahn was like 39-27. So I'm picking out coaches that were there like multiple years,
right.
not like a Chizik or a Harsin. And I know Freeze hadn't been there a long time, but you cannot at that program be 5-13 in SEC games. You just can't.
Yeah, 5-13, and I mean Auburn has offensively. I mean, that's one of the two main reasons you would think that Hugh Freeze was brought in, his recruiting and his offensive coaching, and Auburn has been, as bad as anybody in the SEC this year, but I mean they haven't been much better than that offensively since he's been at Auburn.
Do you see parallels? You know, we were talking about Billy Napier earlier. There's some Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M in here too, which is when you recruit, and keep in mind Jimbo's side of the ball was supposed to be offense.
Yeah, that's right.
Like you recruit a top tier roster, there are expectations, but that alone, like, things can seemingly be going well on the recruiting trail. That alone's not going to save you, especially when your offense is costing you winnable games.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Napier and Freeze would take Jimbo Fisher's record at Texas A&M because he had season in COVID where they were like fourth or fifth in the country. You know, Auburn and Florida aren't sniffing anything close to that. But, yeah, you know, I've always thought that, you know, recently when you think about it with Auburn and Florida, I've thought for a while now those programs kind of mirror each other in the you know, the fact that you need name tags every year. I mean, they've got some diehard fan bases that are having to learn, you know, 45, 50 new people every year. That just gets tough after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, that's the way it is. Hard to believe that you're not gonna have that situation at a lot of places every year now.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you do. It's just I do think at a Georgia and even like a Tennessee, and I kind of think Tennessee is where Auburn was under Malzahn. I mean, you know, Tennessee is not going to defeat Georgia and Alabama in head-to-head recruiting battles a lot of times. They may, you know, and now it's a different landscape with NIL, so you may pick off a player or two because you've invested more in that player. But, you know, historically – you know, Auburn does not defeat Alabama and Georgia in recruiting, and neither does Tennessee. And so, you know, you have a coach that has a little different style to him, and that's kind of what Malzahn was able to do with Auburn, and that's what Heupel's been able to do with Tennessee, is if you can't always beat them in recruiting, maybe have a little bit of an offensive flair. And plus, you become more fun to watch. That's the other thing. If you are losing and you're not scoring points, that is the quickest way to lose your job.
And Tennessee had to go through, I mean, you can excuse the Kiffin thing because he left to go to USC, but Tennessee had to go through
multiple,
Derek Dooley and Butch Jones and Jeremy Pruitt to find Josh Heupel. That's interesting, the thought of Malzahn as a Fulmer, sort of a Fulmer-type figure, you know, within Auburn and the aftermath of Malzahn being comparable to what Tennessee experienced for a couple of football seasons after Fulmer left.
A couple more than they wanted.
Yeah, and I've said it before. I mean, I'm speaking now, taking off the neutral reporter hat and just putting on my Auburn alum had. I mean, it just infuriated me that Auburn got rid of Malzahn in a pandemic without anybody lined up. I mean, that I still think they're kind of, to some degree, still ruined that day. Now, I don't have blinders on. I mean, I do think Malzahn, and this is what's so incredible about Auburn, is I do think late in the Malzahn era, you started to see that offensive line deteriorate. Mm-hmm. And what's just so wild, and you see this all over now. I mean, again, here's another Auburn-Florida comparison. Florida was supposed to have a much better offensive line this year, and we haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Auburn's revamped line looked fine against Baylor, like we said at the top, but you know, it's you've just seen it struggle, and it's weird when you see programs start to go 4, 5, 6, 7 years without good, competent offensive lines. That's usually where the bottom falls out first at that position area.
Yeah, you're right. So some really interesting games, and again, a lot on the line for some of these teams as they, you know, if they're going to retain their coaches. Hey, one other game. You mentioned you were in Starkville last week. Mississippi State has really improved over last year.
They really have, and it's interesting because we were talking about this earlier on our show. Mississippi State has now lost 13 SEC games in a row. But the one on Saturday was the first one they haven't lost by double digits. Hmm. And they certainly had their chances to beat Tennessee.
Yes,
so
they
that
did.
That does not look the part of a team that's lost 13 straight SEC games, and of course they've got a nice non-conference win over the reigning Big 12 champions. But then you think about Kentucky, and they've lost like 7 or 8 in a row dating back to that Ole Miss game of last year in the league, and most of those have been by double digits. And you know, their quarterback situation's a mess. They're, you know, South Carolina had a couple of non-offensive touchdowns to really kind of blow them out, and so I mean Kentucky really looks the part of a team that's struggling, whereas Mississippi State, to your point, I kept them in my top 25. I mean, I had them at 25th last week. I kept them at 25 this week just because I don't see how pollsters can rank Arizona State and not rank Mississippi State, where Mississippi State has the head-to-head win over them. So I kept them at 25. I think they're kind of like a borderline top 25 team.
Those same pollsters have no problem with Alabama 10 spots ahead of the Florida State team that beat them, even though they have the same record as well. A couple peculiarities in the poll in that regard. No, you know, it's interesting because Kentucky and Arkansas could both be looking for new head coaches at the end of the season. I suppose Arkansas at the moment, you know, they could keep theirs, and we'll see what happens in Kentucky. But those could be tough jobs to lure top talent.
Big names, too.
Because, you know, especially in this landscape where I feel like those are two athletic departments prepared to prioritize men's basketball, you know, like few others in the country.
Well, you don't usually have an AD come out like Hunter Yurcich did and say, you know, Sam Pittman didn't have the backing, the support to be able to compete in this league.
Yeah, and it's interesting. If you look now, because every Power Four conference has had a coaching change, and they're all fighting uphill climbs financially to varying degrees. Now, the worst situation is UCLA. I mean, they are an absolute financial mess. But you think about Virginia Tech. They've fallen behind in the NIL race compared to a lot of schools in the ACC. You know, I don't know enough about Oklahoma State. I just don't think they're in the same situation that they were when T. Boone Pickens was alive. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, in just speaking with folks from Arkansas, you know, we're not that far removed, really, where facilities was the big arms race. And if you look, Arkansas doesn't lack at all in facilities. I mean, I love that football stadium. Bud Walton's super nice, and Baumwalker Stadium's probably the nicest baseball park in the league. So they've got the facilities. They just haven't had the NIL money to compare. I had Wally Hall, a columnist from Little Rock, tell me that heard where they were 14th in the league. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the exact pecking order, who was ahead, who was behind, but I mean they are definitely a lower end NIL team. And you're right. I mean Kentucky's made it clear that they're gonna definitely be investing a lot of that revenue sharing in hoops. So I mean that absolutely cripples your football program.
Talking with David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Got his show every day on WGOW that goes 2 to 5 our time, 3 to 6 Eastern time. Speaking of NIL, though, David, wanted to get your thoughts on the story I saw today where apparently the NIL Go is so slow in approving a lot of the NIL packages that quite a few schools are just going ahead and saying, look, we can't wait. These players are expecting their money, so they're just going ahead. I mean, I don't think that's a huge surprise. I always thought it was a huge undertaking, and I didn't know how big a staff they were going to be able to handle thousands of players and their possible deals.
Yeah. I mean, it's just obviously Captain Obvious here. We're in a brand new world and there are all sorts of problems with this. And I have no idea how this is going to wind up. And does anybody get in trouble for this or not?
Yeah.
I mean, when in doubt, yeah, these players. I mean, Tennessee's had an interesting situation with a player from Chattanooga, defensive back number 23, Boo Carter. He was an All-SEC freshman. He's a punt returner, very talented player, but he skipped some meetings this summer, and he got confronted by the leadership council of the team, and he thought it would be wise to take a swing at a 240-pound defensive end and, kind of got humiliated in front of the rest of the team. But it's also a situation where this guy's kind of in that $700,000, $800,000 neighborhood, and Tennessee had pretty much already paid the guy. And so it's a deal where, when preseason camp started, Boo Carter was not practicing with his position group. He had to work out on the side. He had to do the old, quote, earn your respect back with your team kind of thing. But it just made for a very awkward thing because, how could Tennessee cut this guy? They'd already paid him. They needed to get something in return. And I'm telling you, it was the wildest thing. Tennessee had a pick six early in that game the other day to go up 10-7. The play before, Boo Carter makes this unbelievable hit. It results in an incompletion, but, I mean, it's just this tone-setting type of defensive play, and he makes this hit, and nobody celebrates with him. I mean, it was awkward.
Wow. It is a completely different time than we've ever seen before, and who knows where this all winds up. But, David, it's always great spending a little time with you. Again, I mentioned what you got, but let everybody know exactly how they can keep up with everything you got going.
Sure thing. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW, like you said, from 2 to 5 Central each day.
All right, David. Thanks a lot. What have you got going this weekend?
I'm going to lay low. Tomorrow night I'm actually covering our big high school rivalry, Baylor and McCallie.
Uh-huh.
Both of these teams are ranked.
Powers.
Yeah, these are both nationally ranked teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think Baylor's 23rd nationally in max preps and McCallie's 25th. I think they've got like 12 players between them, 12 seniors between them that are already that have D1 offers. Baylor's got a couple of kids committed to Tennessee, so I mean, it is just a sight to behold to watch this game. And just, they have boarding students, so a lot of these, they're players from Canada on each team. I mean, it is quite the spectacle.
Well, that's great. Well, enjoy that, and then enjoy having a little time to yourself over the rest of the weekend.
That sounds great. You guys have a great weekend as well.
All right, David Pascal joining us as he does each Thursday. And we really appreciate him spending some time with us.
Yeah, you missed any of David, check out the podcast of the Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com, use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll get to our first break of hour number two. We'll open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And let's get right to the Drive hotline. And
John.
Hey, John.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. Had a couple baseball mantras I want to put together, a baseball to football mantra, see if there's a conclusion that can be done from roster construction here. So in baseball, they always say that, good organizations at the major league level, you got to be strong up the middle.
Right.
Have homegrown talent at center, second, short, catcher. And, Tuberville always said that his teams were built from the lines out. You start with the lines. The more I think about the portal, it seems like when teams have to dip into offensive line, defensive line in the portal, it seems like teams find more success with a corner, with a wide receiver. Do you think there's anything to being strong and maybe developing your talent on the offensive and defensive lines and using the portals elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone wants to do that. It's just, do you have the patience to do that? And you know, I think a lot of teams get into this thing where it's like, we need offensive linemen now that can play right now, and you go do that through the portal. But if they don't deliver, then are you – you know, have you lost your chance to develop those high school guys, especially on the offensive line? Defensive line, I think you can go a little more mercenary on the defensive line and be fine. But
you're,
I think
you're playing more guys on the defensive line anyway.
Right. Yeah. Offensive line wise, I think you want to build a homegrown offensive line is probably the best way to go, because it usually takes kids several years to be ready to play at this level, and if you're developing them all at the same time, you get that chemistry, you get that connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit tougher to do that when you're going out of the portal. And like I haven't ran all the numbers on the portal, but I don't know how many championship caliber teams are building their offensive lines through the portal year in and year out. I just don't think that's a viable strategy.
I you know, just off the top of my head, thinking back over the last couple of years in the playoffs, there aren't a lot of teams that's offensive lines. They may have a player that they brought in from the portal, but you don't usually see multiple starters on the offensive line who've come in from the portal, especially the year of them making the playoffs.
Well, and not to disparage any individual player, but you get this. I mean, the recruiting people would tell you Auburn has done well in the portal recruiting offensive linemen the last couple of years. Gunnar Britton and Dylan Wade were the top two tackles in the transfer portal when Auburn grabbed them. Xavier Chaplin was considered one of the – I mean,
number two behind Isaiah World.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn grabbed and Mason was highly regarded as
top
well.
Top 15 guys. Yeah,
top, you know, not necessarily at the top, but I mean, Auburn has grabbed some of the better transfer portal offensive linemen available the last couple of seasons.
I think Justin, that word chemistry. I think if you can have guys that have been working and developing together, you know, over at least a year. I mean, but it's tough when you bring in two or three new guys in a year and expect them all to mesh.
And the thing with offensive line recruiting and development is so nebulous, right? There are as many guys who are all pro offensive linemen in the NFL that were zero-star recruits as there were five stars. You got to find the right group and go with it. It's tough, you know. Recruiting people will tell you, offensive line's the toughest one to scout and rank, because it's like, all right, is this guy a really good offensive lineman, or is he just bigger than everybody's playing? And so it's a position group also where you have to be – five people have to be in sync on every single play. Doesn't matter if it's a run. Doesn't matter if it's a pass. And so it is a different kind of – it's a different – the other thing too, you don't get a ton of five-star offensive linemen. There are some, but not a ton. Mm-hmm. There are obviously plenty of four-stars, but it's just like – you know, star chasing on the offensive line doesn't always work in high school. You got to have the right formula. You got to have the right thing that fits for you. And I think to John's point, like it is something that takes time. The problem is if you're a team like Auburn, or if you're some of these other teams that have gone into the portal, you don't have that time.
That's
you feel that pressure, and you end up being in this situation.
My brief list there did not include Percy Lewis, who was also a highly regarded offensive tackle that Auburn went and got in the portal a year ago. And for that matter, Tutal Miller and Seth Wilford were among the top junior college tackles when Auburn signed them, which isn't the same thing as getting guys in the portal, but Auburn has tried experienced offensive linemen. And you've had a mixed bag.
And you're still seeing the problems that you see right now. Yep.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John. 334-321-1390.
It is tough because you look at Auburn, the downfall of the Gus Malzahn era was not being able to consistently win at the offensive line.
Yeah, you know, you've got to have them on your roster to develop them.
Yes, and
that was the problem with
you.
You
got to recruit them, and then you got to develop them. But then also at this point, like, you know, with the portal being the way it is, and when you're in win now mode, you don't feel like you have that time to sit back and develop. And that's the situation that Auburn has found itself in. And, you know, I'm not saying it's impossible to have, like, Auburn's offensive line should be better than it is right now. Mm-hmm. But yes, if you're talking about trying to build a long-term sustainable contender, you're going to want an offensive line where, you know, I mean, at least three, but probably four or five.
Yeah, you would hope that you had everybody, but if you missed at a spot, then you can try to plug that. But when you're plugging multiple holes, it's really difficult. Yep. Want to get another call before we get to the bottom of the hour? No, we'll go ahead and get to the bottom of the hour break. We have calls holding. Right back with those as we head into the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Thursday. Bill and Dan, Justin stepping out to take a call. He'll be back in momentarily, but let's get to the Drive hotline. And Brian is up next down in Jupiter. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Bill, Dan, Ferg. Good to talk to you guys. Happy Thursday.
Hey, bud. Yeah, Ferg just stepped out to take a phone call, so you got us. But,
I got you.
But
got
it's,
you.
It's no, good to talk
all,
to you, Brian.
That's all good. Well, I actually had a comment, or I was hoping Ferg could double-check it, but you can ask him when he gets back.
Yeah, yeah, he'll be back in, I think, pretty quickly.
I had seen on the X that somebody had posted that Percy Lewis was our tackle last year, right? That was against the name.
Yes.
That he's the highest rated. PFF has him as the highest rated tackle for Ole Miss this season.
Yeah, there is a caveat. There is a caveat there. I think he's only played about 15 snaps this year.
Oh, okay.
So he is a backup who is not playing much, but in his limited time, he's had 15 good snaps.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Well, that's good information to know. That's why I call the experts. The question on the I caught the show late, but I was hearing you talk to David Pascal.
Uh-huh.
And you were mentioning about the NIL and stuff. Is there been anything else come out about this supposed cap? I mean, has there been any more? I mean, is it being enforced at this point, or is it just still this supposed cap?
I think especially at the major conference level, schools are still telling their student athletes to submit the deals to Deloitte, right, and go through the clearinghouse. How many of these deals are being rejected by the clearinghouse? Is the clearinghouse sort of rubber stamping? I mean,
the story that I saw today, which came, I think it originated from like Field of Sports, but it's been picked up by a couple of other places, is that there are so many there. I think they said $11 million in proposed NIL deals are just sort of in limbo. They're there on hold, and they've been, and schools have been waiting weeks to hear back, and they haven't heard anything. So of them are just going ahead.
We know what the process was supposed to be as far as Deloitte, you know, responding and either clearing it or saying they need more information or saying that the deal does not pass their standards. But we heard a lot more of that. Understandably, we heard a lot more of that when recruiting was happening and mm-hmm. before the season started and before you had games to talk about. I know there is like a tip line. I know a lot of folks are unhappy that there's like a Deloitte, there's an anonymous snitch line, for folks. And a lot of people are thinking, well, you're just gonna be calling and talking about your rivals.
Yeah. Okay. I found the story that I saw. It was Front Office Sports reported that at least two NIL collectives have started paying players before their deals have been approved because NIL Go has taken so long. And they said that a group of collectives reported about $11 million worth of deals stuck in limbo. And so some of the schools are just saying, hey, we're going ahead and paying them. We'll worry about it later.
I was going to ask, so they are paying them supposedly still. They just don't know if it's, I guess you're breaking the rules or not breaking the rules. I don't know. What is the, are they releasing the terms yet on these kids? Is it public record yet?
No, I have seen no indication that there's going to be any public record of that, which is, I mean, I guess it's understandable, but it's very disappointing. I mean, it's like if you're going to treat this like professional sports, you know what the guys are getting. Yeah. You know what the deals that are being offered to players, on the professional level.
Occasionally, legal things have popped up, and there have been. I know through what's his name? Nico's little brother left Arkansas, mm-hmm. right, and went and joined. Did he join them at UCLA?
He was at UCLA.
And he I guess the story is they through legal discovery, they found that his contract actually was for $400,000 or $500,000, like to play at Arkansas. So there have been some, some verifications that some of these numbers we've heard are legitimate. But as far as like on a player by player basis, no, there's not any sort of requirement to disclose this to the public.
I'm just really surprised by two things. One, I'm surprised that there isn't a requirement for public record, especially being like Auburn being a public university, just for instance, that, that they don't have to disclose that. I guess, I don't know, they're not ours. But the other thing that and I'd like to get your all's opinion, and then that's pretty much all I got today. But I just don't, some of these numbers that are thrown out, and I know they're exaggerated, but like I've heard anywhere from $1 million to $2 million for Jackson Arnold. I don't know what's accurate or not, but I just don't see how this is sustainable long term. I just don't see
how you can continue to generate
that kind of NIL every year, especially when you have bad seasons. I just don't know.
I think as long as there's it's supply and demand, right? If there are if there are lots and lots of quarterbacks that folks think can lead them to victory, then the price of a starting quarterback probably goes down. Mm-hmm. But until then, I think that if there's a guy out there and folks view him as a possible answer at the quarterback position, especially at the SEC, Big Ten, ACC level, that dude's gonna find some money at the end of his journey.
And the other thing to keep in mind is if a school has spent, seven figures for a quarterback and a left tackle, and then they don't produce, you wonder how long those millions of dollars are going to be available from the people that have chipped in that first time and seeing no results.
Sure, but I still think there will be contenders.
Oh, yeah. That's not saying that the players won't still, demand that from certain places.
Well, look, I know we have big time donors. We got Apple guy, we got Yellow fella, but I don't know. I just money at some point you would think would run dry. I guess.
Yeah, you want a return on that investment.
So, yeah.
Money for coaches hasn't dried up, right? You still find that. I think there's you got to look at it a different way, right? Appreciate the phone call, Brian, but like it is
spoken for those of us in this room don't have that kind of money to be talking about. But sooner or later, you do feel it. It's like you want something back.
But I think that's the cost of trying to compete. That's the going rate for a starting quarterback. That's the going rate for the kind of players that you feel like you need. And if you don't want to pay that, expect to get what you pay for.
That's true, and that may be what's going on, what's happening at Arkansas. And then another way to look at it is, if you're not getting that return on your investment, then you're probably going to go find somebody else to be handling that investment. You're going to get another investment manager, which would be, i.e., coach.
And I think at Arkansas and Kentucky, and maybe even at Auburn, opening as a preseason top 10, top 15 men's basketball team might soften the blow a little bit.
A little.
But there's only so many of those spots to go around too.
We get one more before we get to our final break this afternoon. Who we got?
Napoleon.
Yeah, hey, Dan. How you doing, brother?
Hey, bud.
You guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The Big Ten just a private.
Ooh, I don't know if he was going to get into
I'll tell you what. I'm going to put him on hold and try to get
tell you what. Well, yeah. I'll tell you what. We'll go ahead and get to our final break and see if we can reconnect with Napoleon, because it sounded like he went into a bad sell. I was wondering if he was going to get into the proposed billion-dollar deal that the Big Ten might be working on. But we'll see, and you can get in line as well. 334-321-1390. Still got time for you as we wind things down here on the Thursday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner O.
Final segment of the Thursday Drive as Ferg back with us here in the studio along with Bill and Dan. And we're going to see if we can't get a better connection with Napoleon. Where were we, man?
Sorry about that. I hear you guys better now. Stream with its sports, mainly football, just recently. So money's not drying up anytime soon. Yeah, hear me?
Well, yeah, you cut in and out. I mean, I guess you're talking about the the proposed $1 billion deal. The Big Ten is
$2 billion now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, billions of dollars. Yeah. So no, it's not completely drying up. You know what? Every conference, every school is looking for, you know, every dollar that they can get.
Get the right coach and you
definitely helps to, yes, again, sorry about that. We're struggling hearing Napoleon, but you know, he's right. I mean, the better the winning percentage, I would say the better the collections.
Yeah, I would think so. So Ferg, you've got a busy weekend ahead of you with you talked about a little bit on the podcast. You're going to go hit New York on the bye week.
Yeah, so
the Big Apple.
Yeah, so my wife is a huge Broadway person and like big time theater geek, and I say that lovingly. And for our first anniversary present, I booked a trip to New York. And we're gonna go try to see at least one show, maybe two shows, and just enjoy the weekend, the rare weekend away. Because here's the other thing: when Auburn has its next off weekend in football, mm-hmm. we're in the midst of basketball season at that point. So it'll be a good break. I'm looking forward to it and going up. I'm not a huge New York fan, but a couple of days I can definitely enjoy it.
We talked about it a little bit with Andy. The games. Because the schedule was already set before the coaching change happened. And so you had those games where it's like, okay, Bruce Pearl is going to be watching this team gel around Tahad Pettiford with all these new pieces. Now you've added a really interesting new piece in Steven. I find like the schedule was already really interesting for November, December. Steven talked about it at the press conference last week, including those games in Las Vegas, you know, when Auburn plays Oregon and Michigan. But now it's just... like it's they're big early, granted non conference, but they're big early tests for Steven Pearl as a head coach, and I really can't wait to see not just what it looks like in the because you're gonna go you're making the trip to Birmingham, right, to go see the same day as media days, by the way. Auburn doing double duty
the one at Bowell. Looking forward to that game as well. I mean, it's just that basketball team. You know, I'd been watching them practice for the last couple weeks, seeing them in more of a scrimmage kind of controlled refereed environment. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will say, be patient with this defense. Be patient with the fact that this is a really tough non-conference schedule again, and it's a brand new team. But in terms of entertainment value, this Auburn basketball team is going to bring it on the offensive.
Well, I think it's great that you have the two exhibitions like you do, and you're going to find out a lot there. And then you get a couple of ball games before you jump into, I mean, that really difficult non-conference schedule.
Yeah, you get to learn a lot. Stephen Pearl said yesterday, it's just, you know, you space them out too. They're gonna play that exhibition against Oklahoma State, and then they're gonna get a week to kind of mm-hmm. look at it and dissect it, and then get another one, and then get some time to dissect it before the opener against Bethune-Cookman. So I mean, it's the schedule sets up pretty well for them to find out a lot about themselves early, and they're gonna need it because it's a lot of brand new. It's a lot of brand new in terms of personnel.
Justin, tell folks where they can find your coverage of not just everything going on with the Auburn men's basketball team, although you'll be hitting the road with Auburn basketball very soon, but also, of course, your continuing coverage of this football season for Auburn.
Yep, auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year gets you a full subscription. Tomorrow, mailbag covering football and basketball. This morning, the all-basketball podcast that Dan and I do each year during the off week, tons of stuff from Pro Day yesterday for basketball. Earlier this week, did a deeper dive on Auburn basketball's defense. Did a huge deep dive on Auburn football's offense, and just flat out, why is this football team not playing to its personnel? Was the big question everyone has.
Yep. Do you have to put on a biohazard suit before you did a deep dive?
I covered the end of the Brian Harsin era, so I know how bad it can get.
So you already had a biohazard suit hanging in the
closet. I had it ready to rock. But yeah, auburnobserver.com. I am going to be off for these next 3 days, really, and we'll be back on Monday, jumping headfirst with Georgia Week and more basketball as we get closer to the start of the season.
Yeah, and we'll obviously talk more next week about the Georgia game. I mean, I think it's underestimating to talk about how important this game is for Auburn.
I think the next 2 weeks it's make or break for the Hugh Freeze tenure at Auburn.
Mm-hmm. Existential type of stakes for Hugh Freeze and his tenure at Auburn. That's what's on the line the next 2 weeks at home.
Our thanks to, Ferg for being in. Have a good trip.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And thanks to David Paschal for joining us here in hour number one. Don Dunn texted me and said, the fishing's going great. They'll be back in town on Saturday, so we'll talk to him next week. So Dan and I back with you tomorrow. I checked in with our buddy Barrett Salee. To see, I said, look, the Braves are done, Barrett. Barrett said, look, I'm handling PA for varsity football now. So I guess he starts, letting the people know where to park or something early, because I was thinking 4 o'clock our time probably wouldn't be, unless they kick really early over there where they play.
Might talk about it a little bit more tomorrow. Big Auburn High School game.
Huge. Auburn and Central.
Yeah, tomorrow night on Wings 94.3. We'll have a little bit more time for that. Tomorrow as we take you up to kickoff.
Yep, but music's playing. That means we are out of time here on the Thursday Drive. Another fun show. Yep, hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. We will be here. So have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.